Welcome, folks, to episode 3642 of the Survival Podcast, and it is a Tuesday, Just Jack Show. And yesterday we dug into the blood and guts of the world. We talked about 15 enemies of the people. The show was, I guess, somewhat political, at least. It really wasn't, in my opinion, because to me, politics is where you pick a side, and this was more like us and them were the sides. But today is where I get to talk about the type of thing I actually prefer to talk about. Even though as I was chatting with some people as we were getting ready to come on board here and go live, I'm sure there'll be 20%, maybe if I'm lucky, of the number of people in a live stream for a show like this versus a show like yesterday. But I actually think these are the type of shows that are far more practical, that do more to help more people. We can be weathermen once in a while, look up and see what's going on, try to understand the world, and then say, well, what do we do about it? But most of what we can do about it is actually things like this. Like, when you have a very large number of very wealthy, very powerful people telling you basically you're better off eating bugs than beef, and they want everybody to either be a bug eater or a bean eater, one of the things you can do is, you know, take responsibility for producing at least some of your own food. And we're going to go over what I call today my big five for backyard food production. And there's absolutely going to be some people who are going to be thinking, well, why not goats? Well, because I'm trying to do this to where just about anybody, maybe not everybody, but just about anybody could do these animals, any one of these animals. Certainly somebody on a quarter acre. There's no reason somebody with a quarter acre that can keep the blue hairs at bay from the HOAs couldn't do all of these, let alone just maybe one or two of them. So that's where we're coming at it. Small animals, things that are easy to take care of, things that you can at least put some level of automation into, some level of, you know, ethical confinement management, so that, like, even if you do let's say your birds out on a daily basis, you could have a coop and run and let them out, for instance, but maybe you put them on some sort of automatic feeder when you go away for a long weekend so that there's no problems while you're not there to address them. This is the approach that I've come at with this. Or a person that works away from home, you know, maybe they have something like a coop and run arrangement for their chickens. And when they come home from work, they give the chickens the evening outside so that they get some time out or what have you. Or you're doing something like where you can tractor them. There's a lot of ways you can do things to where, yeah, you can be gone 8-9 hours a day and the world doesn't end while you're not there. So that's the mindset. Then we want them to actually be productive and be productive with things that people actually eat. Every time I do this, somebody says, what about guinea pigs? What about guinea pigs? I don't know the last time I ate a guinea pig, and I would do it, right? But I just don't think that is a high production product. It's more of a, you know, you got to think about where people raise guinea pigs, like in the Andes Mountains and all. It's where they're from. It's where they live. So you can just go out and get them. So for us, that might be something more like raising fish in a pond, like bluegills or catfish or something like that. So that's where we're coming at this from today. Before we get into it, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Now, we are talking about protein today. Whether it's eggs or meat, we're talking about protein. And I know a great place to get some excellent protein, Anton's Land of Biltong. Some of the best protein you'll ever put in your beak you will find over at Anton's. And I got to tell you, as much as I love his Biltong, and I do, the Dewar sausages are just my favorite, probably, and a close second is the Calabanazzi sausages. So they're two totally different products. The Dewars is basically an African's form of a dry sausage, but it tastes like biltong. Like, it's like biltong flavored meat stick in the best way possible. The Calabanazzi is more of a kind of Middle Eastern, moving toward like Greek, Italian world that it's from, and it's a fermented sausage as well. They're both delicious. I recommend that you check them out. And remember, whether it's Dewars or Calabanazzi or biltong sticks or whatever it is, you get a discount if you're an MSB member when you buy from Anton's Land of Biltong. Next up today is Joel Riles with K9 Academy. Guys, I love Joel and the work that he does. Joel is probably one of the hardest working people I know. And if you want to talk about a guy who has been knocked back and knocked down multiple times and rebuilt an amazing life more than once, it's Joel. And that's because he knows something about resilience. And when it comes to training dogs, it's all about resilience. With canineacademy.us, you can learn to train your dog in those core obedience manner, and you can then take that out to do whatever it is you want to do. But the key is, training dogs isn't actually hard. Training people is. And Joel is a great dog trainer, but he's also a great person trainer. The way I used to put it when I was a consultant with people about us teaching them instead of just doing for them was, someday maybe you can get off therapy instead of needing us forever. Isn't that a great idea? Anyway, let's get into it today. Let's start talking about this food production. I did a show not so long ago. We went all in on chickens and eggs, and they said eggs is a real red pill. This is kind of like an add-on appendage to that. We're going to expand beyond it, but there is a certain amount of complacency right now because Orange Man is president. By the way, my wife and I changed our – well, we didn't really change. We gave an extra name. So Fox the Cat is an orange tabby, and we started calling him Orange Man the Cat. But, you know, Orange Man's in the White House, and inflation's actually going down. It still sucks, but it's going down. But you know, it's really going down. Egg prices. I mean, it was egg prices. They were shrieking about egg prices for about 90 days, and all of a sudden they're just starting to come down because some of the younger birds that didn't get murdered are starting to go into production. They have multiple production cycles. It will take about 6 months for the full thing to wash out because that's how long it takes for a chicken to grow from a baby chicken into a big chicken and make eggs for you. But it's getting better. So there's this complacency mindset, I think, and I don't think that's a place that we should be getting into. As preppers, we know that things can go wrong anytime. And as we've seen, the biggest things I've seen go wrong in the world since starting this show almost 17 years ago now have been man-made. They haven't been, and even when they are natural disasters, humans and their either action or lack of action or incorrect action exasperated them. As bad as what happened in Western North Carolina, the complete abject failure of FEMA and the interference by FEMA made it worse. Same California. Those were natural disasters. But like the egg shortage was not caused by bird flu. I know you believe it was because the TV told you so, but no, it was not caused by bird flu. It was caused by bureaucrats. Bureaucrats who decided, hey, we got a couple chickens that have a positive PCR test. Let's kill 30,000 chickens because these ones had a positive PCR test. That's what did it. COVID, we didn't have all the problems because a deadly virus was killing us. It was lockdowns. It was mandates. It was all the stupid shit. It was masking directives. Right? Humans cause problems. So if you're thinking maybe I don't need to worry about this as much anymore because, you know, a new human came, I will remind you that the new human is an old human who caused a lot of the problems in the first place with 15 days of slowness spread. So don't think that our problems are gone, and be happy, yes, when prices come down. But there's more to it. I mean, first of all, just even without the stupidity of humans with power, which is what bureaucrats are, stupid people with power, that's the basic definition of a bureaucrat, everything runs in cycles. You know, there's the old song about war, right? And did you really think that would be the war to end all wars? But it happened again and again and again. Of course, I'm talking about the green fields of France. Well, it's not just war that happens again and again and again. If you take any time to read history, you'll see that food shortages and things like that are something that happens in cyclical patterns. And maybe the next time there's a shortage, it's not a shortage of eggs. It's just a shortage of some other food. But when you have your own high-quality food, it may not be that you want to eat eggs every day, but at least you can, right? The next is the quality of most mass-produced protein is crap. It really is, especially eggs. If you want an impetus to start raising your own birds and collecting your own eggs, just that, all you really need to do is go to a commercial chicken farm. And not, I mean, if you go to like Tyson or Purdue where they're raising them for meat for 8 miserable weeks, where they actually go in with a front end loader and take out dead birds every day because that's how many of them die. I mean, literally like a full, like half yard bucket of birds a day come out of those houses. I've seen it. I'm not even talking about that, though. I'm talking about where you get a lot less death, you know, and the birds have to be taken better care of because they are in a production mode with eggs. It's still miserable. it still stinks. You start to realize, like, and they are feeding those birds the cheapest shit that they can get their hands on. And most of the things that you'll see on the shelf where they try to make it better, like free range, you know, that means that maybe they have a little area they can possibly get to outside, or they're in a great big barn, right? But they're not in individual cages. Like, it's just horrible, horrible treatment, and it's horrible quality as well. Now, you know, I don't want to make life too hard for somebody. So if your choice is eat Cheetos or eat mass-produced eggs, yes, eat the mass-produced eggs. But another step up would be to be either producing your own eggs or getting them from a neighbor. And then the ROI on animals is just better than vegetables, especially the big vegetable crops. And what I mean by that is I love to grow food, and I do. I mean, I grow peppers, tomatoes, eggplant, squashes, like cucumbers, and some like kind of little niche things and stuff like that, and some greens and all. But the reality is the amount of work that you do physically to grow, you know, $100 worth of peppers versus the amount of work you do to physically to grow $100 worth of eggs is massively different. You're not digging the ground. You're not, you know, worried about pests. It's very easy to set up a system with, let's say, four hens and produce huge amounts of eggs, honestly, beyond the needs of most families just from four hens. And it's not a lot of work, especially once you set up the infrastructure. I mean, I keep chickens, I keep geese, and I keep ducks. And it's actually no more work to keep all three than to keep one, even though I'm going to advise you today not to go, you know, double and tripling up right out of the gate. I go out, I open the door. That's my morning. I feed them, and I fill up water tanks for the ducks, and I have a grandson that does that. It's really easy. He's 14. He's been doing it for about 7 years. So when he was 7 years old, he was capable of doing the work. It's not hard if a seven-year-old can do it. It's just a great ROI versus how much you put in versus calories out and nutrition out, the quality. Think about what is the nutritional value of a single egg versus a great big green pepper. It's not even close, calorically or nutrient-wise. It's just not. And if you're eating high-quality animal proteins and fats, you become more efficient at the absorption of all these micronutrients. And in doing so, you require less of them for the same level of health. This is known science as well. And then next is animals are really easy to store on the hoof, right? Like, if I have 20 chickens that I'm going to use as meat chickens, I can process five of them this week, eat two, put three in the freezer. I don't have to fill the freezer up with all 20 of them. You know, certain animals lend themselves more to this than others. When you look at fish, like when we are going to eat fish, we never process like 20 or 30 fish at one time. We go out with a rod, we throw it in one of the ponds, we pull out two or three catfish, we fillet them, and we cook those fish that day. Right? When you look at your garden, I mean, we kind of live that way a lot, but there's a point where if you don't start harvesting and preserving, things start rotting and dying. So you don't have to have any real energy in the system to just leave the animal alive for another week. It's a very convenient thing. And then animal waste systems, if you are a gardener, and I am, they supercharge all your efforts. Like, how much fertilizer do you need to buy if you even have, like, a small garden, like 5 4x8 beds and four chickens? Well, if you're doing things right, you don't have to buy any fertilizer at all. You might want to use some mineral supplementation or something like that. Maybe some compost teas, but that's from your own compost. You see what I mean? Like, they grow. So when you're growing animals, you're going to have waste streams you have to tie into. When we channel that waste stream, we can also grow vegetation. If we're only growing vegetation and we don't have animals, we are bringing in inputs. There is no way around it. So let's talk about my big five. And I keep calling it the big five, and I'm going to tell you what I was thinking of when I said that. I'm actually thinking of African hunting. So back a long, long time ago, it was reasonable that a man could go to Africa and hunt the big five, the lion, the leopard, the Cape buffalo, the elephant, and the rhino. Those were the big five. I certainly have no interest in ever killing an elephant. I just don't believe in killing elephants. I don't believe in putting elephants in captivity. So it's not like glorifying that, but it's just, you know, I grew up reading Robert Rourke and Pete Capstick and stuff like that. So it's the Big Five. All right, let's start off with number one of the Big Five, chickens. And the chicken is one of man's oldest partners in the world of food production. We have been keeping chickens a very long time. The first settlers to come to North America had chickens on their ships. Right, so we have, as long as there's been settlement in the New World, there's been chickens here. And long before we left the Old World, there was chickens there. The chicken originates in Southeast Asia. It's a jungle fowl and has taken on many, many permutations. And it's been bred to do exactly what it does well, which is provide food for humans in two distinctively different ways. But why I love them is, first of all, almost everyone eats chickens and almost everyone eats eggs. Like, there's people with egg allergies and all. And honestly, by doing this yourself, you can get around egg allergies. Either sometimes people have a direct response to chicken eggs as being a problem. And we have a lot of duck egg customers that buy our duck's eggs, that's why they buy our duck eggs. But we've also had duck egg customers, and we feed no soy. And we've said, why don't we give you a couple chicken eggs? Be careful. Don't make yourself sick or anything, but just maybe try one and see. And we've had people that were unable to eat chicken eggs. They can eat ours because they're not full of isoflavones. And it turns out that they're reacting to the soy, which is not traditionally what was fed to chickens. We hardly grew any soy in this country until the 1920s. I don't think most people know that. And it didn't really take off until after World War II as well, especially in the vast quantities being grown for animal feed today. So almost everybody eats them. They're also super easy to care for. And that is because they were bred for the purpose. The chicken is designed to be kept by man, right? There is no, you know, Jersey Giant or Buff Orpington or Bard Rock or anything that even looks like one of those that lives in nature naturally, right? Like I said, it's a jungle fowl that looks more like a pheasant than a chicken if you look at the ancestor of the chicken. And that's neutral. It's not really good or bad. It just is. And what that means is that this animal was bred by hand of man over time to fill specific needs of humans. And that means that we have kind of bifurcated into specialization, that some birds are really great egg producers and some are much better for producing meat, without even going to the weird four-way hybrided Cornish crosses. There's just certainly birds that are better meat birds. They're just larger bodied. And then we even have birds that I would say truly are dual purpose. I keep Jersey Giants. They're a fantastic meat bird. They're not really fast growing, but since they don't cost you anything because they're an heirloom breed that will reproduce for themselves for you, they're very inexpensive once you have a flock to work with. And there's other breeds like that. And there are hybrids that are simple hybrids, A and B hybrids. They're not this convoluted crap like the Cornish cross, that you can basically breed for yourself simply by keeping a rooster or a couple roosters of one breed and females of the other. And those females can primarily be egg layers, but the offspring then can be a good meat bird. So you have an ease of doing this yourself because it was supposed to be that way in the first place. Now, everybody talks about roosters being loud and crowing, and honestly, I like it. I've never been disturbed by a rooster crowing. And our chicken house is maybe 30 yards from our back door, and when I get up in the morning to make coffee, I usually don't go let the birds out until Dorothy leaves to pick the children up, because we have our grandchildren every weekend. And so she leaves about 7:30. So the rooster's in there. He's crowing in there. And I barely hear him in the house. And so roosters aren't that loud, but if you have a lot of them, they can be annoying, especially in if you're surrounded by Karens and HOAs and things like that. But if you only have hens, they're very quiet. I mean, every once in a while you get a hen, she gets on that crap where they do that, bah, 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 when they're trying to get an egg out or something. But most of the time, hens are very, very, very quiet. So you can keep them in neighborhoods. And it's helpful if you live in a place where you have the right to do so. And no one is going to interfere with that. Even if somebody complains, like the cops will tell them to go piss up a rope. But if you do it right, you can even kind of do it under the nose of the Karens and get away with it. If the Karen is three houses over, you're probably okay. If Karen looks over your fence on a daily basis, you know, you might have to go a different way with something else. And then the other thing is that chickens, and I think this is partially at least because they were made by hand. The modern chicken was made by man's hand. Since they evolved or co-evolved with us from that jungle fowl into their modern version, they'll eat almost anything that you will. And that is a very good thing because it gives you the ability to feed them a lot of things that you normally would just throw away. And I have to say, we don't do what I'm about to tell you, but if you're really trying to maximize the amount of waste that you feed to chickens, this is actually a pretty good way to go. Most people don't realize that, you know, they talk about slopping the hogs. That a lot of times in the past, your grandparents were slopping the chickens. And what I mean by that is, like, my grandmother would take all of the stuff that was waste product from food, the bottom of celery or the end tips of green beans or things like that. And the reality is if you just throw that shit in a bucket and dump it out there for them, they'll peck at it, they'll eat it. And that's what I do now for ease, right? And eventually it starts to break down, it attracts insects that eat that, so it works itself out. But what my grandma always did is she had a bucket that she filled up, metal bucket, and she would fill it up till it was about halfway full. And then she would add water to it and set it up on top of the wood stove, and she would cook it for like a couple hours until it was like a mush. And then the stuff that they really don't eat, they did. Like if you throw chickens carrots, they might peck around them a little bit and they'll eat a little bit. But if you throw them celery, they don't eat any at all. But if you do that to it, they eat the hell out of it. So if you start taking waste streams and processing it for them, or you can also, like, if you can find any restaurant or something like that that will give you waste, you can get more than you'll ever need for your chickens. And this is something that should not be overlooked by all the people that claim they want to save the world, that they'll eat, the chicken will eat anything we do. The amount of food that ends up in landfills and produces massive amounts of off gas every day is massive. And there's I meant to splice it into today's show. I'll just put a link in the show notes, but there's a very famous clip by Joel Salatin. I actually think he's talking to Joe Rogan. And he talks about this program that they did in the Netherlands. I think it was either Holland or Denmark, somewhere over there, right? And they asked families who wanted, you know, do you want three chickens? And they did something like 3,000 families took three chickens each, 9,000 chickens. And it saved tons, literal tons of waste from the local landfill just by these families having chickens. And they did the math and worked it out that if one in three households kept four chickens in America, there wouldn't even be an egg industry. And it was some metric shit ton of waste that would never go into the garbage. And if we actually used our brains and stopped having restaurants and stuff throw all this food away, actually making it available for chickens, there would be almost no bill for feed. So we wouldn't need the chicken feed. You'd basically be feeding the chickens a waste stream and having the chickens produce eggs, and you would really almost completely destroy hunger in this country. Now, I'm not saying everybody would have everything they want. What I'm saying is, there'd be enough free calories that no one would starve without stealing from somebody to make it happen. And I don't really know another animal that can do that the way a chicken can. The other thing is, even with the HOA carriers, they are easily kept in small areas, especially if you're doing eggs only. And if you're on a small property, you don't need 100 chickens. I'm sorry, don't do that, okay? Like three or four birds for the average family of four is plenty of production that you have available. And those birds can be kept in relatively small coops. I mean, you don't need a huge coop for four birds. You could do a coop and run arrangement, and you can make it very nice. And I have a friend who literally, his birds are like, it's almost like they're in their house, but they're not. And they have this rock retaining wall for the run, and it looks like a flower bed. But if you come up to it and look down in it, and it's his front yard, there's chickens running around there, and they've got like three or four birds. And it produces all the eggs they need and enough to give eggs away. So the, and he lives in a very nice neighborhood. It's not an HOA, but it is the kind of place that if they were running around in the yard, it would cause problems. And, you know, the few neighbors that know about it send their kids over to get free eggs so they're okay. So it is an animal that can be grown even under the head of, right under the nose of the blue hair HOA lady if you do it right and you're smart about it. Let's move on to my number two. And this actually, in some ways, is my number one recommendation for the most people. Quail. Quail, you know, everything I said about chickens as far as eating them, it's true about quail, except for the mental issue. If I sat you down and took two pieces of meat, one was, let's say, chicken thigh, and the other was quail thigh, and you weren't able to see them, you know, as big, full, whole pieces. They were small pieces cut up. And they were cooked the same way and seasoned the same way. And I told you to eat them. The only people out there that would be able to reliably tell me which one was quail and which one was chicken are probably people already growing quail and they really like quail. And that's why they can tell that little bit of a different amount of flavor to the quail than the chicken. Quail tastes like a chicken with more flavor. That's it. They're not gamey. I hate the word gamey. I think anybody that uses the word gamey should have their tongue burned or something with like a hot pepper. There's gamey is not a flavor. There is no gamey taste buds on your tongue. Gamey either means you're a baby ass whiny bitch and you don't like things with flavor and you want bland cardboard tasting chicken, or more likely the person that cooked it fucked it up and you're using that as a catch all to why you don't like it. There is no such flavor as gamey. Okay, and quail certainly are not gamey. And when anybody tells me quail's gamey, I don't even think somebody messed it up. I think that person never ate a quail, especially when on a cooking show or something, because you really wouldn't know. So they're very palatable is what I'm getting at. They're also very productive. It is quite often the case that when your hens, quail hens, come into full production, they will pop twice a day for you. Okay, so if you have 10, well, you know, I would say that it kind of worked out this way. For every 10 female quail I had, I was getting on average about 14 eggs a day. So some of them would double pop, some of them wouldn't. My friend that I'm talking about that has the chickens in the retaining wall also does quail, and he started playing with lighting times. And when he started playing with lighting times, he was almost able to get a full Monty of double pops per bird. And when you raise quail, you generally are doing it for meat and eggs. Like there's a lot of people do chicken just for eggs. And then when you get an old chicken, you got to figure out what you're going to do. But most people do quail. One of the reasons they pick quail is because they're so perfect as a dual purpose animal. They're a much better dual purpose animal than a chicken is. They really are. And I'll get into that here in a second. But my point of that being that generally speaking, when your quail go into their first molt, you don't take them through the molt, come out the other end, have them lay again, unless maybe you have a couple that you really like for breeding purposes or something. Generally, when your females get to that first molt, you kill them all. You've already hatched enough babies that you, when accounting for your male culls, because you don't want too many males, you're all like, as that group is going into the molt and you know exactly when that's going to be based on timing, you already have the next generation starting to lay, which means now we're going to kill them as older cull birds that are going to be a little bit tougher, but they're still plenty good for eating. And that means we have no concerns of hastening what people with chickens call henopause. So one of the issues is if you start using lighting to get your chickens to lay longer in the year, each cycle that they go through, they'll decline faster. So you generally get two good seasons out of a chicken and a third decent one, and it's really crap after that. You can really drastically shorten that if you know, get that chicken to lay 300, 310 eggs in a single year. They only have 1,000 to start out. See, birds are like humans in that a woman is born with a certain number of ovum, and when they're gone, right? And so that's how a chicken works. So a duck starts out with 1,500. A chicken starts out with 1,000. You pull 300 out in the first season, and you're down to 700. You pull 300 out again, right? You're down to 400 total for the rest of its life. With a quail, you don't care. It's not going to be around anyway. You're going to go ahead and turn it into meat. So you can go ahead, and if you want to really maximize with light timing, maximum production, go ahead and do it. The beauty is that from incubator to egg laying or to eating the birds for a meat animal is going to be between 60 and 67 days. Generally speaking, a quail is big enough to process for meat at 6 weeks. And at 6 weeks, they're definitely big enough to go male, female, and call your males. That the females out of that group might lay an egg or two for you in the 6th week, but it's like clockwork, 7 weeks in. So 18 days from the time the egg goes in the incubator to a little baby golf ball, puff ball pops out. And then 6 weeks later, you have meat. And 7 weeks later from the hatch date, you have an egg layer, which gives you, again, a total of 60 to 67 days from the egg going in the incubator, not even hatched, to having food. The chicken is going to take you 105 to 174 days. Your average heirloom type meat chicken, you're going to want to raise to at least 12 weeks before you get enough of the meat yield to go ahead and take its life. So that's going to give you 105 days. When you look at egg production from a chicken, it's 22 weeks after hatch and 21 days from incubate to hatch. That gives you 174 days, almost a half a year to end up with a productive animal. That's a big, big difference. Hey, Alabama says, do quail like ticks? I bet they do, but, you know, they're not really a free-range animal. They don't really work out well for that. But if you were, based on what I've seen them eat, if you were tractoring them and had access to the ground, they probably would eat ticks. The number one tick murderer is the guinea hen from poultry. And probably one of the best tick eaters in nature is the possum. Don't kill the possums, guys. They're passive little critters. I don't have many left around here. I guess the population's starting to come back since I lost Charlie last year. I've had a lot of dogs in my life, and I have had many dogs chase possums. And, of course, what possums do is play possum, play dead. And I have never had a dog that when a possum played dead still went after the possum until I got Charlie. And then I started finding dead possums all over the place. I'd kill them, but he wouldn't eat them. But those are your tick control mechanisms. They can also be easily raised indoors or inside environments or in concealed environments. So Brad Davies, who I had on years and years ago, if you look up Moon Valley Prepper, one word in the show notes, you'll find the first episode I ever did with him on quail. And he was producing something like 20,000 eggs a year and like 1,300 meat culls a year. And he was raising it in a twin stack in a one-bedroom garage in Detroit, Michigan, in the suburbs, on a small lot. Now, I'm not suggesting that you go that far. I'm just saying if you can do that, then when you tell me, but Jack, I can't have chickens because the HOA, blah, 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 blah. You know, a shed, a tough shed, you could raise as many quail as you wanted, whatever that number is. It's probably not as many as Brad was doing, but you definitely could be eating quail, you know, once or twice a week and quail eggs all the time, and giving some away and maybe making some money on them with just some quail in a tough shed. It gets too hot. Air condition it. Run electric to it and air condition it. It's expensive. Insulate it and then realize it's quail. It's not you. If that temperature in there is 88 degrees, that quail is fine. And when you're heating it in the summer, if that temperature in there is like 35 degrees, that quail is fine. They're way more resilient on temperature than something like rabbits. Rabbits are a lot more likely to overheat on you than a quail is. Just, you know, you do have to have some consideration. This is a living thing. They're also easy to use small tractor systems for, and they're not loud. The males make a noise, and it's kind of, I'm going to do my best. I'm not a good quail whisperer, but it's kind of like, and your Karen, and again, unless she's a Karen that looks directly over your fence, we'll assume it's just some songbird. So you can have them out and about and yet controlled very, very easily because their size is small and they're easy to control. What some people will say is, but, you know, their eggs are little. Three quail eggs pretty much equal one chicken egg. So three quail to a chicken. Three quail eat less than one chicken. They have a higher feed conversion ratio. If you go look at what it costs to buy quail eggs are expensive compared to chicken eggs, even the recent high prices on chicken eggs. The only thing you really need to do if you're going to start using quail's eggs is buy a little tool. They cost about $8. They're called a quail egg scissor. And this is one of these things that just bugs the shit out of me when I watch these TV cooking shows and these world-class chefs are trying to break a quail egg on the side of a bowl. It's just stupid. The little egg cut the top off the egg with it, blump, they're fine. If you want over easy, here's your hack for that. Take a wide mouth ball jar ring, just the ring, lay it down in the pan, and you put three eggs per ring with a little bit of oil on them so they don't stick. They make a perfect little over easy egg or sunny side up egg with three little yolks in them. Or you can just cook them individually if you want to be a big boy and not worry about them being together. But it makes it nice for sandwiches and things like that as well. Or, you know, use like you can do that and mix them up and make them into omelets or whatever. But you get as much production egg-wise from quail as you do from chickens, not per bird, but certainly per calorie of input in feed. You get more. And it's a higher quality product. And I have never met someone with a bad reaction to quail eggs. Even when they're fed conventional feed, though, I'd be a little concerned about that if you've had problems with isoflavones. You know, I've fed plenty of people with chicken allergies. I've never met anybody with a quail egg sensitivity at all. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm saying I have not met somebody that does that. The meat processing is the big thing, though, with quail. Honest to God, no exaggeration, not bragging. If I have a living, breathing quail in my hand right now, it will take me 30 to 40 seconds before I have a boneless, skinless breast in one hand and two thighs and leg quarters in the other, and the guts then ready to go to black soldier fly or compost or the dog or whatever. 30 to 40 seconds per bird. And if it's a young bird raised for meat where they're tender, I don't even need any tools. I do that with my bare hands. Off comes the head, quick euthanization, pop the breast out, pop out the leg quarters, break off the feet, boom, and done. And it is that fast. If they're older birds, I tend to use shears, kitchen shears for it, cut out the backbone, and it's just, they're just a little, they are a little tough to process by. I can do it. It's just much easier to do with shears. And then you go from like 30 to 40 seconds to 45 to 50 seconds a bird. And they're delicious and you're done. Some people like to pluck them. Skin is good. I get it. That will take you maybe a minute and a half a bird. What I have started doing when I do quail and I want skin, I pluck the breasts and then I cut the skin around the breast and I pull the breast off. So now you've got a skin on breast and I still just skin the legs. It's too much trouble for me. If you want to go look, like they make little pluckers for quail and it'd be great. But to me, skinless boneless is just fine with them. Breeding, super easy. Super easy. You generally will keep quail cage, you want to keep about five females to one male. You'll have no fertility issues. Five to six females to one male. Keep some reserve males. Sometimes girls kill the male. And then that way, if you have one's getting beat up too much or something, you can swap them out. He doesn't need to be in there unless you're wanting your eggs fertile, by the way. So you can remove the males from the females and only put them in during breeding cycles. Very easy to do since the caging is relatively small, no problem whatsoever. But they breed just fine. And your hatch rate will be somewhere in the neighborhood of like 95 to 97% once you dial in like your time, your temps and all that. And most incubators have pre-settings for like quail, chickens, ducks, geese. So that should be easy to go. Super easy to brood. They are just really little, but that's nice because your brooder can, you know, be something you can just pick up and walk around with. And what most quail keepers do is they build a system for brooding at the bottom of the stack. Shit catcher over it so guys don't get crapped on. And they'll need to be in there about 3 weeks, and then they can go into caging and they can grow out. And you can either have grow out cages, or you can have grow out tractors, or you can do it in an aviary. It's up to you. I've done pretty much all of those things. It's also very easy to automate, especially like the only thing that really requires you to pay attention is when you're hatching and brooding. If we mean by pay attention in like say 5 day blocks. So you can automate water, you can automate feeding. You do have, you know, quail shit a lot, so you need to have a deep enough litter pan to catch that in, but there is no reason you can't set up a quail stack or some sort of a quail system to where you couldn't leave you take Friday early off from work and you ain't coming back till Sunday night. That ain't even hard. A week is relatively easy to do. Some of the other animals we keep, you know, maybe you can figure out some ways to do it, but it's not as easy because they're small. I mean, if you think about it, it's like keeping parakeets or cockatiels. It's if people do this all the time in apartments. Now, I don't recommend keeping, you know, two dozen quail in an apartment. It might start to smell unless you get really good with your management practices. But I'm saying if you can keep, you know, a couple, three, four cockatiels in an apartment, you can keep two dozen quail in your garage, no trouble. And again, very little work for you. And it's partly, again, though, because we have the Courtenay's quail does not exist in the wild. Like, it's not fair. The poor bird's like, a bird wouldn't know what to do if you let it go. They are not suited for survival in the wild. Now, I've had them get out of my aviary and run around the property and do better than you would think. And I think if somebody dedicated themselves to making sure that they knew what to do, if you don't have a really bad predator problem, you probably could free range quail. They get very tame. Like when they're in an aviary, you have to be careful you don't step on them. But in general, they're not meant to live in the woods. They're not meant to live in the wilderness. They don't roost up in trees. They have been bred for over 1,000 years for the purpose of producing meat and eggs. The ancestor, they're not even 100% sure the original ancestral songbird, quail, whatever, that was crossed and bred and then rebred and purpose bred for this purpose. They're really not sure what it is, but there is no Courtenay's quail in the wild. It is designed for this purpose. And they can be cage raised, but again, they are easy to tractor or house in an aviary if you want to do that. They actually do fantastic in an aviary, and I want to break a myth that I've broken before. There is this, and I think it's for people to justify really high-density quail situations. If you put a quail in a cage and it's more than 10 inches high, it'll fly and break its neck. No, it won't. Shut up. You're stupid. I had a 50-foot-long aviary, 9-foot high in the back, and I watched those things fly all the way across it, crash into the wall, fall down, get up, and go, oh, that was fun, and fly back the other way. No, they will not. They're birds. They're not going to break their neck because they flew in a cage. Stop saying stupid shit you heard from some idiot on YouTube. All right? They really are fantastic no matter how you do it. And I will tell you, if you want to tractor them, the key is build your caging from, grid-like caging, large enough holes they can peck through, but you want a bottom so that you can pick them up and move them. If you do that, you can tractor them very, very easily. If you start trying to tractor them more like we do chickens, they're really little birds, and when you're trying to drag heavy tractors and all, you're going to kill them. And I've tried different ways, and we used to have a product we used to sell called the Quail Tracker, and it's just basically a cage, and it's got fairly small grid on the sides and tops. And then it's got grid that's like 1-inch squares on the bottom where they won't fall through, but they can peck through. And it's big enough that as you move it, all their waste doesn't cake up. Every once in a while, we take garden hose when we're using those. And well, we used to. We don't really raise quail anymore. We'd spray them out. Moving on, ducks. Everybody knows me. I love ducks. Ducks are my go-to animal. I have developed a really fond affection for ducks. And I'll tell you why. Honestly, they're just fun to be around. Like, I like my chickens. They're fun to watch and all, but chickens are kind of dicks. I mean, I don't know. They don't have much personality or whatever. They can be kind of fun to watch them run around and chase stuff and all, or, you know, I'm digging the garden. If I find like a big garden grub, I'll go find the chickens and throw it to one to watch them all fight for it or whatever. But ducks are just goofy ass clowns, and they're just enjoyable critters to hang out with. They develop some level of, like, even if they're not where you can pick them up and pet them, they kind of like hanging out. You know, when I'm in the garden working, all of a sudden I hear, meh, 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 and turn around, and they're all just sitting there watching me like, what are you doing, man? Are you going to throw me some scraps or whatever? And they're just fun birds. If you want quiet, ducks would be a problem in a lot of neighborhoods, especially if there is any prohibition on keeping them. Because they do quack, and they do quack a lot, and they do quack loud. Now, I've had days like is there something wrong out there? I haven't heard a duck once today or whatever. And you go out, and they're right there, and they're just quiet and peaceful. And then the next day, it's all day freaking long they're having conversations. But if you want to keep ducks and you don't want the noise, Muscovies are super quiet. So you do have an option with the Muscovy duck for full quiet. Eggs, they're just better. They're higher nutrition. They have more calories, and it's all good calories. They have more protein, and they just taste better than a chicken's egg. I mean, and we'll sell chicken eggs to people if they need some chicken eggs, and we have some surplus, like $6 a dozen. We don't apologize for it. That was before these stupid prices and all. We sell our duck eggs for $12 a dozen. I think Dorothy has a significant number of some older customers that she still has like grandfathered in at a price of 10, but all new customers we charge $12 a dozen for, and nobody complains. I mean, absolutely nobody complains about the cost of our duck eggs. Go sell. I know we just had the price hike and all that bullshit, but it was like the places you were seeing those super expensive eggs, there was like a Whole Foods and cage free and in California or something. Like, national average was about $6 for chicken eggs. Go try to find duck eggs and see what they cost. And they won't be that great of a quality because they're not raised in enough quantity in this country for them to be a viable commercial product, which means they are a great niche product for side hustle money if you have the room to keep more than you need. They also, like, a negative is that there's a lot of things that you can feed the chickens that a duck will kind of peck at and look at and just walk away. They're not quite the omnivore that a chicken is. They won't eat all the food that you will eat. But the good side of that is they really don't cause much problem in the gardens. I met a lady down in near Austin, Bastrop, Texas, when I was down at John Bush's the last couple of times. And she has a beautiful permaculture garden, and she has fennel all through her garden. So, she, you know, it's a place in my heart, man. I love me some fennel. But as you know, the black swallowtail butterfly loves fennel. And I was watching her ducks walk through her garden and just pull the caterpillars off the fennel and not touch anything else. Yeah, chickens are touching other things. They're scratching. They're tearing shit up. I'm not saying your ducks will not mess up your garden at all. I'm saying they will mess it up substantially less than chickens. And if you have high gardens, like 2-foot high raised beds, your ducks, it's going to be very, I'm not saying they'll never get up there, but it's going to be very rare. Chickens are like, oh, look, let's go up there and tear some shit up. So they're very soft on the land overall, if they're properly managed. The meat is a premium product as well. I mean, just go to the store and see what a roaster chicken costs and see what a roasting duck costs. A whole duck will cost you somewhere between $25 and $35. And a standard roaster chicken will cost you about $6 to $8. And that right there tells you everything you need to know. And there'll be less meat on the duck, and it'll cost more because it is considered a premium product. Duck and basically all of the aquatic poultry, as you go toward the Muscovies, goose, it in some way seems closer to beef than it does to chicken. Muscovies definitely taste like young beef, 100%. Your mallard breed ducks, not as much, but it's fantastic. The fat from them is fantastic. So they're just a great meat product as well. And if you grow a small orchard and you have the space and the availability of ducks, then you have the perfect pairing. And so what you want to do is whatever you decide to use for water, you use it. But I like the 21-gallon concrete mixing tubs. You can buy them at Home Depot and Lowe's. They're about $14 a piece. If you had 18 trees, get six tubs, put one under each of six trees one day, fill them up with water, let your ducks poop and play and have fun in the water, and at the end of the day, dump it, move them to the next trees and fill them back up. You could do that forever, nonstop. Just each time you move, it'll move to a different side of the tree. I would actually want more movement than that with that numeric quantity, but you will never have to water. You will never have to fertilize, and you'll have almost no pest problems because they're going to spend a lot of time wherever you put their resource in that water. So they're going to hammer the pests. They're going to fertilize everything for you. And ducks will stick their beaks in the ground when it's wet and muddy, and they filter feed is what they're doing. They're actually moving the mud through their beaks laterally. And they have serrations that kind of are like really fine teeth. They're not teeth. They can't hurt you, but they're like teeth. And as it's coming through there, it's kind of like, you know, if you get food stuck in your teeth, so they're doing it on purpose, and they're finding things that way. Well, when they do that, they aerate the soil. As long as you move them daily, they aerate soil. If you put ducks in one place and you keep putting water in one place and you don't move them, that's where you'll get problems. I call it duck creep. They make everything wet. They stick their beaks in, but then those flat feet go everywhere and it starts packing everything down. You get too much nutrient. You start to kill off your ground cover and it ruins it. So the one thing you need to do with ducks is move it. If I had that, you know, 18 trees, six tub model, it'd probably be trees, 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 other place, other place, other place, other place, other place, trees. About, you know, per 3 weeks, it might be to each group of six trees twice. And you'd have a fantastic result with that type of approach. And there really isn't anything else other than maybe geese that'll do that for you. Geese are not in today's show, but they're fantastic. The problem with a goose is, like, our geese are laying right now, and they'll lay for like another month, and they won't lay again until next year. Where ducks will lay most of the year for you. Now, muscovies are going to lay from about late January till about June. They're going to stop, then they're going to give you a little pop in July, and I'll see you next year. Still, they lay a bunch of eggs. But your mallard breed ducks, you know, your Cayugas, your Rowans, your Runners, all of those guys, they're all mallards, basically, that have been domesticated and bred for color and size. They'll lay the majority of the year. What they're going to do, though, and it's the same with chickens, when they molt, they don't lay for shit. And when they come back after the molt, they lay really, really light up until about after Christmas. As soon as the day length begins to get longer, they start popping them out again. They start popping them out around New Year's, and they start mega popping them out in February. And so it's a good 8-9 month lay cycle of heavy, heavy laying from layer breed ducks. They're also very trainable. And that's something that a chicken is not. A chicken is not trainable. Now, I've seen some people, you know, they really work with a chicken. It'll jump up on their arm like a parrot or something. I don't mean that. You want a chicken to go to the coop, and the chicken ain't ready to go to the coop, that chicken will double back on you 1,000 times, do everything it can to get away from you. Ducks, if as you put them to bed, you say something to them, ring a bell, do anything that's consistent, they'll go to bed. What I've always done, because it was just fun with the kids when the kids were much younger, I'd go, I'd clap my hands and go, all ducks go to bed. All ducks go to bed. They line up, go to bed. And this, the guy from Goldshaw Farm started doing videos about it, saying he didn't believe that it really worked and it worked for him. And then also, I didn't know, it'd been like 2 or 3 years going on. There's like all these YouTubers out there, all ducks go to bed with their ducks going to bed. I started it. It's kind of fun to see that take off there, but it does work. And the nice thing about that is it's not quite dark. I want to be done for the day. I open the door and I yell, ducks go to bed. And then I head over to the coop and they're in there. I've got babies right now. We brought in babies around Valentine's Day, so they're a little over a month old right now. They're already now living outside. They're no longer in a brooder at all. They're out every day with the bigger ducks, though they don't know that all the big tanks of water are way on the other side, because young ducks can get in those bigger tanks. And if you're not really on it, sometimes they get tired and they get hypothermia and they die. So we have smaller tanks for them over by their place. They're out there every day. But when I go out at night, put everybody to bed, They're in the coop. They have only been out of the brooder tractor for about a week. It took about 2 days of pushing them in, and now they just go on their own. And now they're already, like last night, they weren't quite in yet. All ducks go to bed. All the little baby ducks going in there like a herd. I don't know any other animal. Geese will do it too. Geese will do it too, but chickens don't do that. Rabbits. Rabbits are one of those animals that if you don't mind killing a rabbit and you don't need eggs, they're probably the most perfect backyard protein production system you can have. They're incredibly, incredibly productive. The other side of it is that you can basically, even if you're not growing feed for them, even if you're buying feed, if you do it right, you can make enough money with rabbits to pay for your rabbits and have your rabbits be free, even if you're buying pellets. And that's because people will pay more for a doe and $2 than they will for 6 meat rabbits, even if they're the exact same rabbits. Like if you're saying these are 6 meat rabbits, or you can have 3 of them for breed, it's really stupid. It's like, I don't know, you know, if you look at what people pay for, they go out and buy some seeds, but they're actually buying dry beans. And you can buy a pound of those dry beans for like $2, and they buy a little package of the same beans, and they're like $5. It's just there's some weird mental disconnect that when people are shopping for breeding rabbits, they'll pay more money. So you could sell a few sets of breeders every year, and you could pretty much cover the cost of your feed. That's really nice. Processing is actually really fast. It's not quail fast, but I've seen people process a rabbit in 2 minutes. And young bunnies, when they're tender, I've seen people do like I do with quail by bare hand. I've seen Nick Ferguson do that, not even touch a knife, and process, you know, like an 8-week-old bunny or something like that. And rabbits, I'm going to tell you right now, they're the ones that I have the least experience with. I've never raised rabbits for meat. I've eaten rabbits raised for meat, but I've never processed even a domestic rabbit. Now, I've processed a lot of cottontails in my day. When I was, especially as a teenager growing up, I probably ate way more squirrel and rabbit between the age of about 13 and 18 than most people would eat in their whole life. But I don't have a lot of experience raising rabbits, but I know a lot of people that do, and I know a lot about the benefits of doing it, and I wanted to include them today. They're also super easy to automate. They're another animal that if you set things up right, you know, you can go away for a long weekend without somebody taking care of them for you. Maybe it's a good idea to have somebody pop in once a day and just look at everything and make sure nothing's broken. But they are a fairly easy animal to do that with. They also are absolutely delicious. Now, people say, that, you know, everything tastes like chicken. Frog tastes like chicken. Shark tastes like chicken. Rabbit tastes like chicken. No, rabbit tastes like rabbit. But if you've never had rabbit, and I'm trying to explain to you what rabbit tastes like, it tastes more like chicken than anything else you've probably ever eaten. And if you would eat chicken, unless you have a mental problem with it, you would eat rabbit. And you can do all the same things with a rabbit that you can do with a chicken. They're also just really great mothers. You don't ever see people brooding rabbits in a brooder box and feeding them out of a bottle or something. I guess if you're kind of a nature freak or something, you wanted to, you could, or the mother died or something, or you found babies in a hole and the mother got killed by the dog. But when you are raising rabbits and that mother has those baby kits, until they're about ready to go into a grow out cage, you don't have to do shit. Now, sometimes a new mom will get it wrong with the first litter or two, but once she's got it worked out what she's supposed to do, they pull fur, they build a nest box, the babies are born, so you don't have to do anything. Now, that can be true with some chickens when they're broody or ducks when they're broody. I just have not found it as consistently true as it happens for people. Like, it happens all the time with rabbits and sometimes with other things, and you can't rely on it as far as I'm concerned. They breed like rabbits. In other words, they make a lot of production for you, and they are a great producer of meat, but their manure is gold in the garden. It's absolutely gold in the garden. It's one of the few manures we have that you literally don't have to do anything with it. You can take the manure, put it in the garden, that's it. That's all you have to do. It's a cool manure. Now, in my experience with examining what other people have done, the ultimate system, though, is you have bins below the cages, the poop falls in the cage, and the cages are full of worms. And now you've got all the beauty of rabbit, but all of the biology of earthworms, and that is gold. And now, if you're keeping fish or you're keeping chickens, you have another food element that you get free food from, because your birds will be happy to dig through all that manure, but they'll really be happy to eat those worms, right? So that's another huge advantage if you're doing rabbits. And they're super quiet. Like, the only time I've ever heard a rabbit make any real noise is when it was in distress, and that's a horrible sound. That sounds like some sort of demon child screaming or something, right? Anybody that's ever used a rabbit predator call for coyotes, you know what I'm talking about. But in general, rabbits are completely quiet. They don't make any noise at all. They're the perfect under-the-Karen radar animal. You can put them in your backyard. If somebody asks, they are, those are our pet rabbits, Karen, go away. Well, you have a lot of pet rabbits. Well, you have a lot of ugly features on your face. Please go away. Like, I really, like, there is a point where you just tell people to sod off. That's probably one where you can, because what is she going to do? Call the city and say these people have pet rabbits? I mean, unless you have specific ordinances against it, you can tell your neighbor to piss off with rabbits. And, you know, here's the bigger thing with all of this stuff with the Karen stuff. People complain about what they see. And people complain about what they hear, and people even complain about simply what they know about that they don't like. If they don't know about it, if they don't know about it, they can't hear it or see it. And if you follow that rule of threes, you make sure the Karen doesn't know, doesn't see, and doesn't hear, then she'll shut up and go complain about something else, and you'll be left alone. Rabbits, I'm just saying, are really easy to do that with. They can be kept indoors, in sheds, some sort of shelter. In fact, in many instances, this is going to be a good idea, especially in some part of the year. Either you want shade in your hot summers or some level of shelter in your winters. And again, I've seen a lot of people doing rabbit systems that, you know, they use sheds and they kind of move them to different sides of the shed. And they're outside during a lot of the year. But if it's really hot or really cold, they use a little bit of supplemental heater cooling, and at that point they move them inside. They just move the bins to catch the waste with them. If you're going to keep rabbits, you're going to have to learn a lot more than what I'm talking about today. But one thing to be aware of if you've never done it before, their urine is caustic. It will just destroy things, and their urine has to be handled properly. I haven't kept them, so I'm only telling you what I know in this one instance. Everything else that we're talking about today, I have kept personally. They also, though, you can track your rabbits really easily. I've seen a lot of people do that. Most people that track your rabbits, what they do is they keep their breeders in a typical rabbit hutch arrangement. They let the mothers raise the bunnies until they're ready to be weaned. They then remove the bunnies into the tractor, and they finish the tractored rabbits on grass. One more thing before we move on from rabbits. It's also the easiest animal that you can produce meat with to feed without leaving your house. They can eat willow. They can eat grass. They can eat clover. You can grow a rabbit garden, which is mixed greens and things like that. A few willow trees and a few poplar trees, coppiced or pollarded, and you've got massive amounts of rabbit food. And I really don't know of anything else that's small yet highly productive, like per pound of energy, per calorie of energy in, per pound of calorie out for you to eat that comes close to a rabbit. I really don't. And again, they are very, very happy to eat a lot of things that just grow in backyards, especially if you're not growing, you know, an HOA lawn where it's all Raleigh St. Augustine or all Bermuda grass. They'll eat that. But if you grow your garden, you grow your lawn more like a meadow, more like a pasture, where you've got plantain and maybe a little bit of comfrey here and there, and you've got some clovers and stuff like that. I mean, they're just happy to eat that stuff. And you can either bring them to it or bring it to them. Next, though, fish. I'm going to go quick through fish because this is going to be a long one today, and I don't want it to be too long. But your fish farm, because it's what it would be, can look like a yuppie water garden if you want it to. I mean, Karen doesn't need to know that it's not. In fact, I would still have a couple big pretty koi in there anyway because they're cool. And this is a cool thing if you've ever done like small backyard water garden ponds, garden ponds and things like that. When you put bluegill in there, when you put catfish in there, you can barely see them. You certainly don't see them looking into somebody's backyard. You have to know what you're looking for really to see them. They kind of, especially as the system matures and some plants and stuff come in and we get some sediment down, they just kind of vanish. And they don't really like to be out in the open either, so they hide. So what I'm saying is, unless you tell Karen, hey, I just killed 5 catfish out of my pond and put them on the grill, she ain't going to know. And I don't know many places where you can't have a backyard garden pond, right? So they're really great for that. And the more you live in a HOA type, even if it's not an HOA, the more you live around yuppies, the more you should make it look ornamental, and it's pretty that way anyway. By using local fish, you're stock those practically free. When we first started playing with aquaculture, I did buy some channel catfish and some other things, and eventually I realized that I was getting better results and a much higher ROI. Instead of buying, fingerling channel cats for about $1 a piece, a bullhead catfish wasn't going to grow as fast, and when it got really big, it would be half head compared to a channel cat. But if I went down to the park pond, I could catch a bunch of bullheads that were 8 inches long already, and it only would take one season to go from 8 inches to about 13, which is kind of optimal size for a bullhead, and I could get twice as many for $0. So it was completely free, and the same with bluegills and red ears and shellcrackers and all the sunfish. We call them perch in Texas. Some people get all butthurt. That's not what a perch is. A perch is a yellow perch. Or I shut up. Shut up. It's a perch in Texas. It's a brim in Florida. It's a sunny in Pennsylvania. And if you don't like it, nobody gives a shit. Boy, Karen. But we started using those, and they're fantastic food fish. And they have no real cost. The other side of it, though, is since they're local fish, they're used to local water conditions. They're used to local temperatures. And they have resistance to local parasites and diseases. So we have never had a problem with native fish dying from parasites or diseases in our systems. We just haven't. And again, they're fantastic and they're easy to catch. And, oh, darn, we need to restock the duck pond. All right, we'll take my grandson fishing for a couple of days next week. It's not a hard thing to do. And, I mean, when I say fishing, we're not talking bass boats and shit, guys. We're talking a couple of light action rods. And, we'll do things like either salt, like for bluegills, we just do worms. We have a worm farm, pull some worms out, take them. For the catfish, like my two number one baits for park pond catfish are either take the cheapest freaking raw, it has to be raw, the cheapest raw shrimp you can get from Walmart and cover it in salt. No special salt, just salt. Leave it in the salt for about 2 days, shake most of the salt off, stick it in a Ziploc bag. It'll store in the refrigerator for years after that. It's been preserved. It gets really hard, and it has enough stink to it, they still want it. And I've caught 10 little bullheads on one piece of shrimp, where if you use fresh shrimp, they like it, but they steal it really easy. That, my other one, and I have a bunch, but my other one is just a go-to, chop up hot dogs into bite-sized, bait-sized pieces and pour strawberry Jell-O in a Ziploc bag with them and just leave that alone, and it will cure them. They get sticky. I don't know why catfish like strawberries so much, but they do, and it's really hard for them to steal versus a fresh hot dog. They steal really well. But you can get all of your fish for free. Now, the other thing is that, we talked about how at the beginning, animals in general, the beauty is you only really have to harvest them when you're ready to eat them. Now, if you want to harvest a bunch, like at the end of a run of meat chicken so that it's all done and you're done for the year or you're done for the quarter or half the year or whatever, fine. But you don't have to. But that's really true with fish. I have never processed a lot of fish at one time from my ponds. I've done it on a fishing trip, like we go out and, you know, white bass, a limit of white bass in Texas is 25 to an angler. And I've gone out with two buddies and we've caught 75 and had to come in because we were out of room for more fish, and we're done in 2 hours. That does happen. But in the backyard, we only take in what we need at any given time. So there's times I'm like, we didn't take anything out for dinner. Do you want fish tacos tonight? And I'll go out to the pond with the rod, and depending on how big I catch, you know, at a time, I'll catch 2-3 catfish and go, okay, fillet knife, flip over, skin off, throw that rest of it into the compost, fish tacos. And that can be, like, I can walk out there, and in about 20 minutes, they're already filleted, and we're putting them in the pan. And so they're ready when you are, and that is really, really nice. And, I mean, everybody likes fish tacos, right? Who doesn't like fish tacos? If you don't like fish tacos, you either just won't eat fish or somebody's made your fish tacos the wrong way. They're also, like, all of the fish that really work well that you would catch locally for your own grow out, I don't care how big they are when you get them, they will train to pellets in a couple weeks. If you already have some fish that are pellet trained, they'll train really, really fast. If you're putting your initial fish in, you know, this is the key. Go out in the evening when you're maybe 20 minutes from it getting dark and throw one handful and watch. If they don't eat it, don't feed them for another couple of days. Do it again. Watch. And when they start eating, everybody will start eating. They start mimicking each other. They get that triggered response. And once they are eating, you're good. And I always feed in the evening, somewhere around 40 to 30 minutes from dark. Again, when you're first starting a new tank, it makes a lot of sense to feed them a little bit closer to eat. That's when they want to eat. And do not overfeed them, because that's your number one way you'll kill them. If every time I've had fish lost, you know, we get a little overboard with feeding, and then we get too much waste in some of the aquaponics systems. I've never lost them in the larger ponds that way at all. They are also really easy to create supplemental food for. Worms, minnows, black soldier fly, they eat all that. Our number one supplemental feed for our fish is minnows. And we grow mosquito fish. They're like the North American guppy. They'll grow all the way up in the northern states and all the way down in the southern states. They're a live bearer. They don't cannibalize their young, so there's no special treatment needed for them. What will happen, though, I've noticed this anyway, about the end of the fall, you almost see no females, and all the males are really little. They're like young of year. And you almost think, like, are they going to come back? But then right about now, they start exploding in population once the water warms up. So for the time of year when your fish are eating heavy, there's plenty of them there. What we do is we have our large tanks, our big fish are in, and there's plenty of minnows in there too, but, you know, they're going to get really picked off. Then we have upper tanks that are smaller that have no large fish in them that are all minnows and shrimp. And then there's an overflow system. And sooner or later, minnows and shrimp go downstream. Again, black soldier fly, excellent feed for fish. They all love it, you know. Worms, they eat the crap out of worms. Usually when we want to get some fish out of the tank to eat, we just go to the worm farm and pick out, you know, half a dozen worms and take a rod and reel back there and do it. So if they'll eat it when it's on a hook, they'll sure eat it when you throw it in. And when you run out, you just restock. You just restock. You know, if you're keeping chickens, for instance, and you're not keeping a rooster because you can't, when your chickens need to graduate to the stew pot, then you got to go get babies and raise them again. When you look at the because we try to just keep some records of how many we put in versus how many we took out. Like, yeah, it's getting kind of light population. It's time to restock. Let's just go to the park and bring some fish home. The way that we actually bring the fish home is kind of simple and cool. So what I do is I buy the really, you know, kind of big collapsible hampers, but they're like a thin mesh. You take one of those and they fold flat so they go in the trunk of your car, back of your truck, whatever. When we go fishing, you pop it open, you sit in the water and throw the rock in the bottom of it, and they're tall enough they're not going to jump out, and as we're catching fish, we just throw them in there. And then at the end of that, we usually have a big bucket with a battery-powered air pump to bring them home, and it's only about a 20-minute ride home. We lose very few fish that way. If I when they're in the lake, if I see any that look like they're just not doing well, I'll just let them go, right? Because they're free. All right, let's just talk about a little bit more before we wrap up with not everything's a bed of roses with this. This isn't for everybody, and I really recommend that you try one thing and figure out if you like it and get it bolted down before you do the next thing. Don't go trying to like raise all five of these at once. Animals do tie you to the land, and you can do some things to automate so that you can get away for those long weekends and all without a caretaker. But if you're going to go away for a week or two for a long vacation, you're probably going to need somebody to come check your property that knows what they're doing. This means you have to find somebody that's capable, and you're probably going to have to pay them. You know, you might have to pay them the wage of a computer program or something, but you're going to have to pay somebody for that kind of time because, one, you owe it to them. Like, they deserve it for taking that time for you. But, two, you want to be able to rely on people when, if they don't do it right, you come back, all your stuff's dead. You don't want that. And you need some level of smart design to go along with it, not only so you can be gone for a few days, but so that when somebody's taking care of them for you, you want to design your systems so that a person with a ninth grade education and an intention to do right is smart enough and capable of keeping your animals alive for you. That would be perfect, but you don't want anybody starving. You don't want anybody dead, right? So you need to think smart design. They can at times, you know, attract Karens in the department of making you sad. So it's a really good idea that you, first of all, know what you're legally permitted to do. I don't like to use words like rights here because I believe that everybody has a right to grow their own food, but that doesn't mean that the government agrees with me. But it would be a good thing for you to know, for instance, where you live. Yes, you can have chickens. Here's the things you have to do to legally have chickens, and here's how many chickens you can have. And then stay in that boundary. So if Karen does make a phone call, and you might end up with somebody like local PD coming that doesn't know any of this, and they tell you, well, you know, your neighbor doesn't like these, you're going to have to get rid of them. You can say, officer, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but you don't have any authority over this, right? This is not your world, and I would have printed out, this is what the city ordinance is on this issue. Thank you for your service. Thank you for looking out for us. Thank you for visiting me. Have a nice day. Don't be a dick, but be firm, right? Assert your rights under the law, I guess is the way to put that. And, you know, if there's like three things you want to do and legally you can do two of them, I'm not even saying not to do the third one. I'm saying maybe do the other two first. Like if it's totally legal for you to have quail and fish, but there's some specific prohibition against chicken, maybe you just don't do that or get everything in place and well ordered first. And then if you still think you need it, then try to find the underground chicken mechanism. They are living things, right? And that means you cannot ignore them. And we've talked about setting things up so that you can get away for a long weekend or what have you. And there is some things that make it actually easier for you to get production from a chicken making you eggs or a quail making you meat or a fish making you meat than there is from tomatoes and peppers. But the reality is if you go away for 2 weeks, you may have some peppers rot or tomatoes rot on the vine or whatever. If you have automated irrigation, you're going to be all right. Nothing's really going to be that big of a deal. And if one of your pepper plants dies or one of your tomato plants dies, you don't really feel bad. When it's a living, breathing creature and something went wrong and you feel bad. So you do have to think about it's a higher life form. And to be blunt, you put it in the fucking box is the way that I look at this. And I remember I got that from Michael Jordan, the bee whisperer, not the basketball player. I haven't heard from him in a long time, by the way. But he was here and he was doing a talk on beekeeping. And he went off on this tirade about how people can be shitty beekeepers and they don't do all the things the bees need for you to take care of them. And yeah, bees live in the woods on their own, but they live in a tree, on a branch, whatever. They don't live in a box. And he's like, you put them in the fucking box. And since you put them in the box and they didn't ask you to put them in the box, then it's your responsibility to take care of them. And that mindset is how you have to be when we start bringing living, breathing animals. even if I'm eventually going to pull that little quail's head off and eat it, I'm sure it's not going to enjoy that moment, but it's going to be a fraction of a second. I'm going to do it efficiently and cleanly, and I'm going to treat that animal with respect and dignity and care at all other times. In fact, I'm still doing it at that point of taking its life because I'm going to do that with dignity and care. I know some people have an issue with that, but I can't help you people today. I'm not here to talk to you guys about that. Tractoring, though, this is the other. You put it in a box. Free-ranging animals is easier than tractoring, not just because it's less work. So if I have, let's say, 6 chickens and a tractor out there right now, and it gets really cold, and I've put shade over them, they're even colder. If I haven't put shade over them, and all of a sudden the temperature comes way up, it's hotter. If it starts blowing crazy wind, right, there's all kinds of things that that animal has enough intrinsic intelligence that if it goes wrong, it's too hot, it will seek shade. It's too cold, it will seek sun. It's too windy, it will seek shelter. And when you put it in a box, unless you've made accommodation for that, it can't do it. So I'm back to Michael Jordan. You put it in a box. It didn't ask to go in a box. You need to be paying attention either through design or checking up multiple times a day. Because I've heard things like this. Joel Salatin, you know, he brings these people in, these interns, and some of them want to go beyond just being an intern and become a partner. And they do things like, hey, you know, you want to raise chickens, how many you want? And the guy's like, I want to raise 2,500 chickens. And he's like, well, we can sell 2,500 chickens. We'll charge you a marketing fee, but here's your rate that you'll make. Do your numbers and figure out if it works. And that person will say, you know, figure it. And they got to pay for the tractor, for building the chicken tractors, all the shit, right? And, you know, maybe they get a little bit lazy and they get a really hot day in Virginia. It's 98 degrees and you go out and of your 2,500 chickens, 1,200 of them are dead. That's a problem. You put it in the box. Once you put it in a box, you have got to be responsible for it. You got to think about things that free range animals will deal with themselves, and you put it in a box so it can't deal with it. I've seen a lot of that over the years. Another thing is, not a bed of roses, is that some people processing animals is hard to do emotionally. It's hard to kill an animal. I grew up hunting. I think the first thing I ever ate that I killed was like a dove that I shot with a BB gun when I was 8 years old with a buddy, and we did a pretty bad job, but we did manage to get it over a little campfire and cook it, right? So I don't have problems taking an animal's life. When I grew up, my grandmother had some chickens and a goose, but that was pretty much it. There were farmers all around us that we bought meat from that you, like, there's the cow today and then tomorrow he's a steak, right? And I never had a problem with that. But I grew up as a hunter. And when you go out and whether it's shooting a squirrel out of a tree with a .22 or a deer with a .30-06, that animal has a lot of advantages over you. And you feel as a hunter, when you do your job right and you take that animal's life, you have earned your right to that production, to that sustenance. When you take an animal, especially like turkeys were hard for me the first time I ever did turkey. The turkey will just walk up to you, you kill it, and the next turkey's like, what are you doing? And to me, that was hard. To take an animal's life when it wasn't afraid of me, when I wasn't earning it, I was just harvesting it. What helped a lot was the first time I heard Joel Salatin talk about it. He said, you know, no matter how much we have to process, we don't do it every day. Because if you do it every day, it just becomes work and you stop feeling anything. And if you take something's life, you should feel something or you're not quite human anymore. So it was like, well, it's okay to feel that way. But what I found is when you learn to do it right and you get good at it, you become okay with it. It won't happen for everybody, though. And I know plenty of couples were like, and it's not always the guy either, where one side of the couple will take care of the slaughter. Not even necessarily the other side can't do, like, you know, parting out meat and stuff like that, or vacuum. So, and Dorothy will do that. Like, I'll process a bunch of stuff and I'll bring it in. And then she goes, oh, it just looks like meat from the store. And she'll handle all the vacuum sealing and labeling and all. but she don't want to kill it. And this is just something you need to know if you can do before you step off into this world. And if you can't do it and you want to have some level of production anyway, like, I don't want to do it, but I want to have chickens for eggs only. That's great. Let me just explain something to you. A four-year-old chicken is an expensive pet that produces almost nothing. So you have to have a plan. What am I going to do when these birds age out? Are you just going to have at some point 12 chickens, four of them lay, four of them sort of lay, and four of them don't do shit, and you're going to let them retire? If you want to do that, I won't fault you for it. Just you need to know what you're doing. You either need to have some place you can take them and have them taken care of, or you need to not do this. And I think a lot of times one of the best things you can do, like if it's something like, let's say you have no problem right now processing chickens for colts, but you're like, I don't know how I feel about doing it with a rabbit. Go find some of the breeds rabbits in your area for meat and ask them to be able to tell them you'll pay them. Tell them you're paying $50, $100. I don't care. For a class, one-on-one class, you want to come over, you want to slaughter a rabbit or two, completely process them end to end and learn how to do it, and then take it home and eat it. And if all that works, then probably going into making rabbits is a good thing for you. If that doesn't work for you, if you take it home and then you just can't eat it, or you find out that your wife that said she would eat it won't eat it, then you probably don't need to invest in all this infrastructure and sideline yourself this way. It's always been a serious thing. And I mean, I've done some classes here where we've processed chickens on site and things like that. And I always tell students a couple things. One, if you have a problem with it, you need to walk away. You just do it and no one will say anything to you. Two, if anybody gives anybody any shit because they had to walk away from it, the person that gave them shit will be off my property and you will never step foot on it again, because I need this to be, I hate using this term, but there are places where you need a safe space. And when you're determining whether you can do this or not, there, it should be safe for a person to say, I can't handle it. We've only ever had like one person that really couldn't handle it. We had another person that she kind of messed it up and it got in her head. And it was a chicken, and instead of getting the carotid and the jugular, she got the trachea and it went hard. That same class, I actually felt bad because I do this thing with chickens specifically when I process them, and I really don't know how I learned it, but I did. And I don't use killing cones. I hang them from a tree with a couple pieces of cordage, and I bleed them out into a bucket full of wood chips. And what I do is I hang them when they're up, you know how they are. When they're upside down, eventually they kind of black out. They're awake, but they're just calm. When they get that way, I grab them by the head, but not hard, just a little bit of force, and put a little tension on them and pull them out horizontally a little bit. And I take my other hand, my right hand, with my forefinger and my thumb, and I kind of massage their neck. And when you do this, and I'm not talking about choking them out here, I'm just talking about like a light massage, their eyes just kind of roll back in their head. And then I'll have my knife in a sheath or sitting on something in front of me really sharp, and I'll come and I'll cut both sides of the neck. And when I do that, they don't move, and I'll put them in the bucket. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll bleed out for 30 or 40 seconds and then they flutter. Well, every once in a while, they don't even flutter. It's like they go to sleep, they bleed out, they never move. Well, when I did this class and showed people how to do it, that happened. And I felt guilty because I knew damn well none of the students were going to get that good of a result. But I'm just saying, like, there is something to doing this that requires a certain switch mentally. And if you're not capable of it, it's okay. It doesn't mean that maybe somebody else wouldn't do it for you. I know people that, you know, they happen to be lucky. They live somewhere where somebody will process chickens for $4 a bird. I live in a place pretty close to where people will do it for $4 a bird, but it's an hour drive. I ain't going. But if I had a run of 50, I ain't $40. You know, was it four times $200? It's going to take me more than a day to do that many birds by myself. And they'll pluck them and everything. I would run them out there for that. But if I had a hard time processing and I had somebody close that would do it for me, I would take that out as well. And talk to people around you. If you live in a place where people do this, is there someone that maybe would be willing to do it for you? Or at least is there someone that would be like, yeah, I'll take your retired hens? Because I've had people ask me and I'm like, well, I'll do it, but I need to explain to you what this means. I don't have a chicken retirement home here. Right? If you're giving up hens, because they don't lay anymore and you want to go to Tractor Supply this spring and get new birds, I'll take your bird, but I'm going to eat it, the dog's going to eat it, and the wife's going to eat it, and you need to know that. And I've actually had people say, well, I don't want that. That's what I'm trying to get at here. You don't want to be that person. Like, you're looking for, there is no such thing as a retirement home for chickens. And when a chicken is ready to retire, it's ready to go to the crock pot. And don't get two or three animals. And when I say two or three animals, I mean animal types at once. I will tell you that keeping chickens and ducks together is no more work than keeping chickens or ducks by themselves. But there is some differences. And once the differences are integrated into a system, it's very clean. But if you're just starting out, I would get chickens, or I would get ducks, or I would get quail, or I would get rabbits, or I would do fish. I would not do even two at once. I would try to get all your infrastructure that you're going to need into place before one animal comes onto your property. This is almost, nobody almost ever does this, right? Like, oh, we got an old shed. We'll use the chicken coop. Is it a coop? Is it ready to be a coop? Do you know what that means? Right? Like, you need to have your brood, if it, you're going to get babies, you need your brooding equipment, your heat lamps, baby's food, right? You need bedding for the brooder. You need, and then don't be like, well, we'll brood them, and then when they're ready, I'll build the coop. No, you won't. You need to have everything that you need, at least as a base, in place. Trust me, your life will be better. And when you get that fully up and running and you're happy with it, go about 2 months and don't even think about adding anything else. What's going to happen is your life is going to be chaotic, difficult, easy, and simple. And when you get to simple, that means that you've fine-tuned your system and your schedule to where it just happens. You might be like, you know what? I like simple. I don't want to go through that again. Maybe you don't want to go through that again this year. Maybe you wait a season or two. And then you bring in a second animal. And if you get to a point where you have any leftover production that you're not able to sell, you probably shouldn't add production either. Yeah. In the end, the reason I come back to this subject one way or another over and over again, I probably do a show at least 8 times a year in this vein of backyard meat production, is there is a war on meat. That's what I want to finish up with. There is a war on meat. Period. And I'll say this as I'm getting ready to wrap up. I have got one question that I noticed today from Huston. So if you have a question and you're not Huston, you need to go ahead and ask it again right now so I can get it in for Q&A at the end, because it means I missed it. Put the word question in all caps and then go. But back to this thing on war on meat. There's also a war on food freedom. There is. I really believe a lot of what I told you yesterday is all of what I told you yesterday, but a lot of it pertains to this is gospel truth. The people that make the drugs in this country don't want you well because it doesn't profit them for you to be well. What you can do is just take this fundamental reality. No one who makes a lot of profit on something wants the thing they make the profit on to go away, right? I mean, this is just fundamental reality. If you made a lot of profit cleaning up garbage, you might think garbage needs to clean up, but you don't want a world where there's no garbage anymore because you're out of business. And just think about whatever it is you do for a living, there's some need or desire or want for the thing that you produce in the end, even if you're like in marketing or something, whatever the widget is your company sells or what have you, right? That widget is necessary to be sold for you to get a paycheck. Okay, so what does the medical industry profit on? Illness and disease. Believe it or not, they don't profit on death. There's a different industry that profits on death, right? The war industry to a degree, but even them, they want too much death. They'll ruin it, right? There won't be any new people to die. So the food industry profits on what? Gluttony, sloth, and obesity. So the two primary giant industries that are either directly or indirectly connected to your food supply are medicine and food. And let your food be thy medicine in the words of Socrates, right? Hippocrates, right? I don't remember which one of them said that, right? I think it was Socrates said, let your food be your medicine. And your food can be your medicine. It can also be your poison. And there is no concerted effort. And I don't care if RFK is now the president of HHS. There will be no concerted effort to make the food industry such that you will have less obesity, sloth, and laziness, and addiction. Like, the entire food industry is built on those tenets. And if you're big food, you don't want to see people shop only the perimeter of the grocery store. You don't want to see people growing their own food in their backyard. And you damn sure don't want people eating really healthy, even if you sell the healthy food only. Because you can only sell so much healthy food. The way, how do you grow a market? How do you grow a market? You sell more to the same people. Like, if you're in the food business, everybody's already buying. You can't grow the market by getting new customers. There's only 7 companies that make 99% of the food on the shelves. The pie's divided. It is what it is. They're not going to grow their market unless what? You can make the average consumer eat more calories or eat the same amount of calories of lower quality at the same cost to them and a lower cost to you. That's the only way to grow your market. And our entire market is based on growth. So the food industry is your enemy, as I said yesterday. And so for you to start to change that calculus, you need to spend more money for higher quality food. And one way you can afford more high quality food is to grow some of it. So what you can't grow, you can buy, but you have more money now to operate with. Then you got the medical industry. The medical industry profits from illness and disease. As I said yesterday, there is, if you go watch a drug commercial, it's always for a lifetime chronic condition medication. It's never like, do you have cancer? Well, with blah, 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 you can take one pill and be cured. No, there's a chance to live longer. We'll profit from 5 years of your slow death, right? But most of the drugs aren't even something like that. They're things for type 2 diabetes, to lower your A1C or whatever. You know, I didn't say correct your A1C, lower it, right? Or for, you know, some sort of mental problems, depression and you know, being neurotic or having anxiety. Look at, like, all of the shit that they've commercialized, like hers and hims. Like, your dick doesn't work because you don't eat the right food. So here's some Viagra. We'll put it in an auto mailer for you on hims, right? And, you know, like, or, you know, supplemental testosterone. And I'm not even putting that down because I know people using it. It works well for them. But why do we have such chronic issues of these things? And what I said, when do you get off of it? So you have two of the largest industries in the world that directly impact your health. And there is nobody in that industry that's your advocate on your side. This is what you can do. And at the same time, we have the most powerful, wealthiest people in the world. They're picking ribeye out of their teeth every night, but they're telling you, you need to save the world by eating crickets, grasshoppers, and worms, and rice and beans. You really think all those rich people telling you how morally superior it is to be vegan are vegans? Do you think that? Those fuckers are washing down freaking ribeye with caviar because it's the best food in the world. Animal-based foods are the healthiest, most nutritious, most nutritionally dense food on the planet. You want your dog to be healthier? Start giving them a raw egg every day. Even if you feed them crappy kibble, just add a raw egg to it. Watch what happens. What do you think happens to you? We need to do this because absolutely nobody is going to do this for us. Looks like I have one more question here. From what I can see, no, there's two. I got 3, 4 questions, 5 questions. Okay, I'm going to do that, and we're going to be done. Houston says, question, I have a half-acre pond. Would you still recommend bullhead or channel? Either. If you can get your hands on channel catfish, I would recommend them. You might want to look into a little bit about spawning habitats, spawning requirements for channel cats, Huston, because upon that large, you can get channels reproducing in the pond for you. But you may want to give them something like cinder blocks or build them some caves or things like that. They like to go in stuff. In fact, I've seen a really cool way to fish. Now, you got to check legality. This is legal in Louisiana, and they will throw you in the jail in Texas for it. But you've seen the long trot lines people put out for catfish. Well, I saw this old dude. This was cool as shit. He was taking, like, jugs, like antifreeze jugs and shit like that, and using a tie wrap to make – and the hole looked pretty small, but some big-ass catfish you get in there. They slide in. And it was just like every so many feet there was another jug on this line. And he ran that line twice a day, and he'd pull the line up to each jug come up, and there'd one or two catfish in every damn jug breeding. And the catfish had already laid their eggs in there, and another catfish comes and lays more eggs, and he was showing, like, you could see vital eggs, like live eggs in the – so it wasn't really hurting the population, but Texas says you can't do that. Louisiana says just stay within the limits of your license, and you can do that. So if they'll go in there, then you need to give them something like that. The problem with larger ponds when you start doing bullheads is they're so prolific, you will have to intentionally harvest sufficient amounts of them, including probably turning some of them into pet food or something so that they don't overpopulate unless you have something in there that will eat them. You know what eats bullheads? Channel catfish. You know what else eats bullheads? Flathead catfish. So that's something you have to, like, decide for yourself from a management standpoint. Packrat said, will any rabbit meat pretty much tractor out on grass alone without feed, supplement, or do you need Daniel Salton's special strain of rabbit or some such? The answer to that is I don't know. I will tell you that the person I know that knows the most about rabbits is Nick Ferguson. And Nick pretty much feeds his rabbits for free. And yet he always keeps a feeder with pellets or like Timothy hay in there because he's like, it's super cheap. It's an insurance product. The animal's not going to starve, and I don't want the animal to starve. I know Daniel has gotten really intensive with his breeding programs, and he has bred rabbits specifically to survive on grass. I will also say this, though. I know a rabbit that naturally survives on grass. I just don't know what the legalities are each and every place. In Texas, a rabbit's pretty much a varmint, and you pretty much shoot a rabbit whenever you want to. In Pennsylvania, where I grew up, a cottontail rabbit is a small game animal. It would be illegal to keep, and I'm not sure if they're legal in Texas or not, but they're just legal to shoot whenever you want. And there's a pretty narrow window of small game season where you can shoot one without going to jail or getting fined for it. But it would seem to me that we could be growing cottontails. They're just kind of small relative to true meat rabbits. But I would just take the approach of make sure that they don't go hungry. Rabbit feed is pretty inexpensive as like a backup. Trial and error. Do Muscovy ducks need pools or ponds, or do they make a mess of your yard like other ducks? Ducks make messes. Muscovies make less of a mess of a yard. Muscovies do not work as hard as mallard reed ducks. They don't go as far, and they don't do as much, so they don't make as much of a mess. They are not real big on the beaks in the mud shit and the packing down. It can happen here and there, but they don't do it as much. Where Muscovies make a mess, and more so than mallard reed ducks, is if they can get onto a porch or a deck or something like that. They are the nastiest shitting animals on the planet. Now, they shit in the grass. It just goes in, and it's no big deal. When they start shitting on porches and decks, it is gross. And so the big thing with Muscovies is to make sure, if you're going to let them range freely, that areas of hard surface, because they like it, because it's hot, so it's nice and cool on the deck. And the deck has got a shade, and it's cool, and it's concrete, and I'm going to go shit there. The other thing you need to know about Muscovies is I believe they can shit on command. They can summon a shit, and they can say, I'm going to make this shit nastier than my normal shit, like vomit-inducing level. And when they do that, it's usually girls, when they have babies, or they are on a nest. And I've had them where, like, I need to check because I don't want you with 400 eggs under there. And what we do, once we let them sit, we mark them with a marker. Put a little X on them, and that way they start attacking you and shit, but it's a duck. If you can't handle it, I don't have to tell you. And we'll go through them and take all the new eggs out every day. And they'll shit when you do that, and it is like you're throwing up in your mouth a little bit, right? So they are less of a mess out in the grass, more of a mess on a surface, and stinkier in a coop. But I do, again, I think it's intentional. That's like just like a skunk sprays you with piss, but a skunk doesn't actually stink. But they are way less bad with the duckcrete stuff than a mallard breed duck. But if you're having your yard really messed up by ducks, you're not managing them right. Like, I don't have a messed up yard, and I got a bunch of ducks. I got ducks, I got geese, I got chickens. I don't have a messed up yard. But, like, what I'm saying about protecting the hard surfaces and stuff, we had a female Muscovy decide she wanted to nest in the garage and managed to get in there and had a clutch of eggs. And by the time we figured it out, she was in a place we really couldn't get to her well, and I did not enjoy cleaning that up. I'll just say that. Robert says, can quail at 3 weeks handle cold? Yes, sort of, possibly, depending on how cold, but I'll tell you what they cannot handle is wet. Wet in young birds does not work, and more so of non-waterfowl. So I had a bunch of quail in my aviary. They were about 3.5 weeks old. They did fine till they were like 4.5 weeks old. We got a really bad windy rainstorm, and we ended up with quite a few of them died. So, you know, do with that as you will, but what is cold? Is cold 20 degrees? Probably not. Is cold 40 degrees? Yeah, they probably can, especially if they have someplace they can get to and warm up. It will shock you how much heat quail produce. My late friend Steve Larkin one time brought me about a half dozen quail over of a certain color phase that he had show up in his birds. And I thought he had a heater in the box, and it was just half a dozen young quail. They were about 4 weeks old. So they have a real ability to warm themselves up if they're cold. But, again, you need to make sure that they can thermoregulate somehow. Green country, agroforestry. God damn, don't do this to me, man. Guinea pigs, better than rabbits, worse, no opinion. Guinea pigs are not a meat animal for Americans. Okay? No more guinea pigs. Every time I do this subject, somebody's going to ask me about daggone guinea pigs. No more guinea pigs. No. No more freaking guinea pigs, man. Cooey, cooey. No. Honestly, you know, I've never had it. I'm going to say it probably is very similar to rabbit or squirrel. I just don't think that the meat yield is there for you. That to make it worth the time and the effort, they're more of a boutique treat thing where they're natively grown. You know, they eat them on like special occasions and stuff like that. But nobody's really making money selling guinea pig meat. The production amounts are just not there. With that, before we wrap up real quick, you know, we talked about meat today. Well, if you're cooking meat, one of the things you really want to make sure you do is you cook it to a proper temperature. And when I say proper temperature, I don't just mean, oh, if you don't cook it high enough, you're going to die. I also mean if you cook it too high, it's going to taste like shoe leather shit. So we want to be high enough in temperature to get our level of doneness and low enough in temperature that we haven't overcooked it. And the best way to do that is an instant read thermometer, right? This is another, like I mentioned, the quail egg thing on the cooking competition shows with the guys cracking a quail egg on the side of a bowl like a chicken egg. It's just stupid. The other thing is, well, I'm not sure if I got the temperature right on that steak. I know it's fake drama, but shut up and use a thermometer. Well, if you're going to use a thermometer, the one I recommend is named the Thermo Maven. And I've tried a lot of instant read thermometers. It's not even close how much this one is the best. I'm serious. It is absolutely the best. It's incredibly well built. I've had a lot of them. They just kind of start to fall apart over time. I've also had some that, because they're so poorly built, even if they're accurate when they get them, the accuracy wanes. I've had plenty of them. They use those stupid like watch batteries or like hearing aid batteries, and they always are hard to close up. This uses a standard AA battery. It's either AA or AAA one. But it's a standard battery. It pops open. There's a little screw that holds the thing on that keeps it from like getting wet if you're outside and it rains a little bit when you're on the grill. But you pop that off, you pop your new batteries in, and you're good. It's got an auto shut off, so if you leave it open and you forget, it won't kill the battery. It's even got a freaking bottle opener engraved into it. My favorite feature on it, though, because I lose shit, it's got a magnet on it, so I keep it stuck on the side of the refrigerator, and I always have it. And they're about $20. Nothing else I've tried is as good, as well built, and as accurate. So check these out. Again, it's called the Thermo Maven, one word. It's available at Amazon. And of course, you can find my reviews on my website, and you can find all my reviews by category at tspaz.com. If you start your shopping at tspaz.com, you help support us no matter what you eventually buy. Also consider becoming a member support brigade member. If you do that, you really help us out. So number one way I pay the bills around here is memberships. And a membership really does come with benefits, and it pays for itself if you use the discounts. With that, I'll wrap up. Now, I know you're thinking this Wednesday tomorrow is going to be an interview. No, we had some scheduling issues, and I'm going out of town on Friday. And so I just told Dorothy, don't worry about scheduling an interview this week. So it'll be another Just Jack show tomorrow. I'm not sure what yet. Then we'll have our expert panel in our Friday flashback. If you could tell, I am completely rehabilitated or recovered from the flu. That took way longer than it should have. I've never been hit in the dick that hard by the flu before in my life. Again, I hadn't had the flu since 1996. This one was weird, but I'm completely recovered now. I'm glad to be back on the attack. One more real quick word here. I heard from the host yesterday for the beef processing workshop that I'll be at on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. As of yesterday, they had two seats, but he thought someone was going to buy, like somebody was like in and out on it. I'm buying both of them. So I don't even know if they have them, but if you go to the website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and just search for Crunchy Mama, you can find out about that and see if there's any seats left. This is going to be an awesome beef processing class. You will leave with about 50 pounds of meat. You will eat wonderful food, not just from the hosts over at Crunchy Mama, but Chef Ken Daniels will be there with me. And you get to meet my grandson. How awesome is that? So it's short notice, but again, as of yesterday, we're still two seats left. So if you can get on out there, get on out there, and I'll catch you tomorrow with something else.
Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.